You can now hear Film Actually on Stitcher Radio. Stitcher allows you to listen to your favorite shows directly on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or WebOS device. The latest episode is always available for you. No syncing needed, no memory wasted. Don't have Stitcher? Download it for free today at Stitcher.com.
This is Special Agent Joseph Keenan of the ATF. We're here to execute a search warrant on the premises on suspicion of violation of the National Firearms Act. Put down any weapons. Come out with your hands up and you will not be harmed. Repeat, you will not be harmed.
I think it's the use of the word repeat that makes this work every time.
It'll be much less terrifying if you just come to me.
This man's got nerves!
Make love in the hammock!
Good.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Film Actually, episode 60 for the 15th of October, 2011. And I am David McVeigh, and I am joined via the miracle that is Skype, Josh Philpott.
I don't know if I'd go as far as miracle, Dave.
Oh, come on. Could you imagine? Sorry, just to interrupt here for a second, but could you imagine 10 years ago somebody saying, yeah, we'll do a show where we can actually be in separate rooms and everything? This is pretty miraculous.
It's definitely
childbirth is miraculous, dude. You know, the whole concept that out of a load of 2 million sperm, one made it. That's a miracle. That's a miracle.
So you're saying Skype doesn't actually hold up to the miracle of birth?
Skype is not one of 2 million sperm. I'm sorry.
Reverse soundtrack in our chat room.
I'm going to go with Richard on this one. It's not just because he's here with me in my room, in my studio, just mainly because I don't think it's a miracle. I think that it's amazing technology, but... But it still has issues.
Okay, let's try this introduction again. I am David McVeigh, and joined with me via that really tacky, stupid thing called Skype is Josh Philpott. How are you,
That's
Josh?
Better. That's closer to it. Now Skype's going to stop working for us. For
the I know. I was trying to. I was trying to inflate its ego to keep this show going. Right.
No, I want to watch it go down in flames. I'm just that kind of a person. So anyway, hi Dave.
Hi, Josh. How are you today?
Oh, yeah, you know, I'm all right.
That's good. And we're also joined by Richard Gray, who is also on Skype and is sitting in the same room as Josh.
Or so you think.
Or yes, so I think.
For all you know, we're running two different mics from two different rooms.
That's true.
Last I heard, you were pantsless and in the bedroom, so I'm a bit concerned.
We're actually still in the living room, but yeah. It's we nice to have to people believe whatever they want to believe, so we'll just run with that.
See, and the problem is that I can't make so many bold claims because they can actually see me.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I can be caught out on these lies.
You can claim to be pantsless, though. I think you could get away with that one.
But I think they've seen me stand up
so, and prove it's right or wrong.
Okay. What a messy, messy
Sorry,
introduction.
Okay, stop hijacking. The show's all yours. Take it back.
This is Film Actually. This is the official movie podcast of geekactually.com. And this week we have another pair of reviews. So it's been a big couple of weeks for releases because we've been having to like double up to catch up. This week we're going to be doing the prequel to The Thing. And then we're going to follow that with Kevin Smith's highly anticipated and slightly controversial film, Red State, plus a brand new list of five great films with religion as a core element. Now, we will come back to why we're doing that, other than the fact that we've got Red State on the show, which is another factor. But I think it was from a previous discussion on this show, we thought maybe we should like
discussion / rant.
Rant. I thought we should balance this up a little bit. All right. You can also record this show live, and we do have an active chat room happening right now. You can join us live every Saturday, starting at approximately 1:30. We're a little bit late today, as usual, but not too bad. Only about 10 minutes late. 1:30 p.m. Australian Eastern Daylight Savings Time, UTC plus 11. geekactually.com/live. Okay, with all of that out of the way.
God.
It's a big, long mouthful of an introduction. Because we have no formal news section this week because of the double review, but we couldn't let this slide. A major trailer came out this week.
Oh, yeah.
And I think we will just play that right now and get this
it's over. It's a little art house film by memory.
Just a little art house film. So I'm going to play this right now. Now, this is where it gets a bit interesting with Skype because they're going to hear it live, but they're going to see it time delayed. So,
we've seen it before.
But you guys have seen it, so you should be okay. So here it is. This is the first official trailer for Marvel's The Avengers.
You were made to be ruled. In the end, it'll be every man for himself.
What do?
We get ready.
There was an idea to bring together a group of remarkable people. So when we needed them, they could fight the battles that we never could.
Gentlemen,
what are you prepared to do?
No offense, but I don't play well with others.
Big man in a suit of armor. Take that away. What are you?
Genius, billionaire, playboy, philanthropist.
If we can't protect the Earth, you can be damn sure we'll avenge it.
Dr. Banner, your work is unparalleled, and I'm a huge fan of the way you lose control and turn into an enormous green rage monster.
Thanks.
Okay, guys, tell me what you thought.
I think it's Robert Downey Jr. in that film.
I think he might be. Now, in our chat room,
he's the only one with dialogue in the entire film.
Well, you've got to remember, man, he's probably going to be the one with all the quip lines because, essentially with those trailers, you want to set up as much, you know, sort of hilarity as you can. And, he's really the only one of the group that really has a funny bone. So,
yeah, I mean, but, man, are those lines good.
Yeah. And I just got to say very quickly that it's already been answered by Joseph, but we'll bring it up. A pop shot says, sucks they couldn't get Spider-Man. Spider-Man was never a member of the Avengers, so it doesn't matter.
Ah, au contraire.
I was also going to say this.
In the new Avengers, he is.
All right, new Avengers. I'm talking about Avengers, dude. We're talking about, let's go back in there. Although I do remember there was a great issue of the Avengers back in the 80s where Spider-Man just showed up at Avengers Mansion and said, I want to be a member of the Avengers and tried to be part of the team. And they basically kicked him out because he wouldn't be a team player.
That doesn't surprise me with him.
I thought that was a really funny issue because he tried so hard, but he just couldn't do it. But anyway, there's been mixed reactions about this trailer. I've been seeing online people saying that it's just more of the same of what we saw in that post sequence and that they really didn't show anything more. And they all kind of went ho-hum. I thought it was pretty cool.
Look, it's a teaser trailer and it doesn't show much more, but it shows a lot of the stills that we've been seeing over the last couple of weeks. It's brought them to life for us. But, you know, bloody hell, this is the end of a really long run. I'm excited as all hell.
All I'm going to say is, it's the fucking Avengers, man.
It's the Avengers. One complaint I did see a lot of people say was about the song that they used in there, which was Nine Inch Nails, We're In This Together Now, off the 1999 album, The Fragile. Fantastic double album. If you haven't got it, go out and get it. But it's probably the only Nine Inch Nails song that's not been used in a trailer.
Look, you laugh, Dave, but it's true.
I know.
It's the only one they haven't used. It's really because it's a really weird, it's a really tender love song that was from the album, and they've chosen to use it as the kick-ass song.
But you have to think, man, that all of Nine Inch Nails' stuff is kind of kick-ass, no matter what.
Oh yeah, look, Resonance.
I would really like them to have seen a big, bold, you know, the music that they're going to use in the film style soundtrack to that. Not the actual music, because you're right, it won't be finished yet, but something that gives it like that big grand scale. I just think using a rock song,
Baby Elephant Walk or something.
Yeah, well, not Baby Elephant Walk. But you think back to like the original Spider-Man trailers, or you think back to you know, stuff like that, and you go, I'd like to have made it a bit grander. Putting a rock song on it, no matter how good the song might be, it just doesn't have any weight to it.
Yeah, but I think it's going to it. Well,
how
look,
dare you?
First of all, yeah, exactly. Take exception to a rock song. This is Nine Inch Nails.
It's a rock song. Get over yourselves.
No. Nine Inch Nails is,
dude. If it doesn't have like 12,000 instruments in it, and it doesn't have a rising score, and it's not by someone famous, Dave doesn't want to know about it.
So that's not true at all. I thought the ES Posthumous stuff was great. It's two guys on synthesizers, but you know,
Trent Reznor's
score for
7,000 instruments in that.
Yeah,
stuff.
Absolutely. Dude,
I'm just throwing around weight because I love watching Dave Rahl whenever I say stuff like that.
I just think that the trailer is visually splendid. I don't think that the soundtrack complements the visuals.
No. Look, the thing is, at the end of the day, it's the Avengers trailer. I don't care. I'll be first in line. Let's do it. I
damn mean, straight.
Fuck it. Yeah, look, yeah. I mean, like, at this stage, man, like, they've ticked all the boxes successfully enough that I don't care. There are a few that I don't like in the series, and it's just due to, you know, little things. Like, Captain America, I think, you know, needed a bit of work, and I found it a bit flat, and we've discussed this, and you don't think so much of that. But, look, I don't mind. I mean, essentially, they have made a series of movies that are better than the crap that we've had out of 90% of the, you know, sort of make them into real life kind of movies when it comes to comic books. And now here we are at the end of it, about to chuck all of them into one film. I mean, like, this is monumental. I mean, I don't give a shit what these people think about the trailers. Realistically, I'm going to go and I'm going to enjoy the shit out of that film. And if it's bad, then it will be the best bad movie I've seen in ages.
It's going to, look, this film has got two things going for it. A, it's the fucking Avengers, and we've seen all these characters, we've been building up to this.
Have you
and
ever
two,
noticed that Dave always says the fucking Avengers?
It's the fucking Avengers.
I just love that.
Yeah. If we can't save this planet, we'll fuck it.
Yeah, absolutely. And the second point is this motherfucking Joss Whedon. So, so yeah, this thing has got two major geek cred points to it straight off the bat. System Kill in our chat room has said, cough the Hulk. Look, the less said about the Mark Ruffalo bit at the end, probably the best at this point. I mean, look, I like Mark Ruffalo, but I don't know if he's Banner.
Yeah.
You know? Well, look, you know, many have tried before.
Well, that's true. Yeah. Hopefully what we'll have is not much Banner and lots of just Hulk, and then it doesn't really matter who's playing Banner because Lou Ferrigno's the voice.
The thing that worries me the most about the Avengers, and I think, you know, Marvel have actually played this right in the sense that every one of these people have had their own movie first.
Yeah.
So you don't need to set them up. So it was a ballsy move and they pulled it off. The problem with a team movie is that you can't possibly give time to everyone. And I joked about it with the trailer that this could be the Robert Downey Jr. show, but they're all major stars now in their own right. Yeah. You know, who plays second fiddle?
The point is, though, to that is that Joss Whedon is a master of ensemble casts.
And that's true. We'll give him that. So, but he's a master of ensemble casts over the course of a 7-year TV series.
Good point.
Master in a 2-hour film? And I know he's done the Serenity movie, but he also had a TV series where he already established those characters.
Yeah.
But isn't that very similar to what he's done here? Where it's like Serenity is coming back and working with a whole bunch of people. Admittedly, he has that personal connection with these people. But at the same time, I mean, like, I've said this heaps of times on the show before, which is that the movie is setting up the Avengers, and the Avengers were always on shaky ground to start with anyway.
Yeah.
So essentially you're going to have a lot of people playing it'll probably seep through from what would be happening off and on the scenes would kind of seep into the film, and that's probably going to work in its favor.
Yeah. True.
So, I'm excited.
I'm excited. I can't wait to see more.
Wrong. Yeah.
I need a chance to see Black Widow do badass things. So, you know.
Can we say to our US listeners that Australia and the UK will be getting this a week before you? So
that's just mean.
That means that we might be junket on that one. You might be. You never know.
Maybe. I'm going to be in London, but it will be playing there a week earlier than the US. So either way, I will see it before you.
So you're going to be in London, so you might actually miss the junket as well.
I'll probably miss the junket.
Sad face.
Well, Josh and I will send you our regards.
On the flip side of that, I'll be in London.
doing
That's
what?
True. Oh. That doesn't matter. He'll be in London.
I don't care. I'm on holiday in London.
Oh, right. Holiday. You know? Awesome. Fantastic. Yeah,
that's good.
I will be going. I'm just going to try and get to the Sundance London Film Festival. I'm over there this time next year.
So that's kind of a contradiction in terms, isn't it? The Sundance London Film Festival.
I know it's weird, but they're doing the first Sundance London Film Festival, which is, I think, a lot of the stuff that might have played at the Sundance Film Festival in the January, February, whenever that runs. It'll play in April in a 3-day event that's run for the first time in London this year. Next year.
Joseph in our chat room has said, by the way, we do have a chat room. We've mentioned that before. Joseph in our chat room has said, when does it come out? And it's actually, was it May, June, or
May
July?
May the 4th.
May the 4th. May the 4th be with you. There you go. May the 4th next year. So,
and it's April 20th. I think it's meant to be April 27th here and in the UK. That's what the line is. Disney have recently changed their things to just say April 2012 at the moment in Australia. But if it's consistent with the London date, with a UK date, then it should be the 27th.
Right.
Cool.
Cool. All right.
Yeah.
So from that, we move on to what have we been watching this week, guys, aside from our two featured films?
I'm trying to think of when we last did this. Had I seen Carriers? A week ago.
Yes, you had seen Carriers.
Yeah, okay, so we're seeing that. Well, I saw The Thing with you guys.
Yes.
Drive was last week.
Now, did you watch, while we're in the while we've been watching section, did you guys manage to take up Snake's Challenge? Or Matthew's
I took up Snake's Challenge, and I am very happy to admit that at this stage I have not finished the entire film because I just got frustrated. I got to the point, like...
Before you go on, Josh, I think we should clarify this for people who might just be coming in on this for the first moment. Matthew in our chat room challenged us via email to watch a movie called Battle of Los Angeles. Now, this is not Battle Los Angeles with Aaron Eckhart. This was a Asylum made for Sci-Fi Channel piece of crap movie called Battle of Los Angeles. And he challenged us to watch it because it's so bad. Now, we've all got copies of it, and I watched it. Now, Josh has finally got to it. Now, Josh, you're filling us in. You haven't quite finished it.
Yes. Now, I sat down to watch it, and we all know that I have a limited amount of time at the moment with almost every game under the sun coming out over a two-month period, which means that my attention span is very limited right now. And I chucked this on because I was like, I will do this, and then I will sit down and play some games. I got halfway through it and went, my life is worth more to me than watching this stupid fucking film. Exact quote to my wonderful girlfriend, who then went, can we please turn this off? I think I'm getting some form of cancer. And we both decided that we will put it on hold and go back to it again. But the problem that I have is that it's Asylum. So it's like, it's bad on almost on purpose.
And it doesn't get better.
No, and I mean, this is the problem. It's like, congratulations for creating the perfect formula to make bad films. But the whole reason that I used to like bad films is these people went into it wanting to make a good film, whereas these people go into it wanting to make a bad film. And the obvious difference is there between the two films. It's like, when I'm watching a movie that's trying to take itself seriously, you can see the shock in actors' faces when they realize just how bad the lines they're giving are. You can see confused people. You can see extras that are actually looking offset because no one's given them proper direction. It's like, these movies are bad because they are genuinely terrible. The film that I was watching was just terrible for terrible's sake, and I was struggling to deal with that because it's like, you are aware how shit this is.
My question to you, Josh, is did you get up to the samurai wielding woman yet?
No, I was waiting for it. I was actually trying to hold out to find the samurai woman, and I couldn't wait any longer. So I am planning to finish it, and this will take several weeks, I think, to get through because I just don't care. However, I have to say on the same note, well done, Snake, for finding a film that I actually find physically exhausting to watch.
He found us a film that could actually possibly break us.
I'm not admitting that in any form or way. This
well, it didn't break me. I did get through it. It broke my wife, though. So, I actually got to the end credits. So I actually did make it, but my wife
You're
passed
a
out.
Madman.
So, Richard, you're next.
Yes, I am. Well, I next that I have to watch it, or next that I have to tell you what I've been watching?
You have to watch it.
Okay. All right.
Chat room has said, this is why it's a challenge, because it's not an easy movie to watch.
Well, I'll try. And on that terrific recommendation, I have to watch it now.
All right. So back to Josh. What have you been watching other than other than that?
Honestly, man, no. It's been pretty game centric lately. Like I've pretty much just done the two. I've been slogging through a bunch of TV series lately is kind of more what I've been looking at. Just slogging through more Monster, getting through some American Gothic. But this is usually done literally while driving on trains and buses. So it's one of those things where it's like I'm not getting a lot of time at the moment, unfortunately.
Fair enough.
So that's all I've done pretty much.
All right. So now we get to sit back and relax for a minute.
Sorry, one more. Oh. I did just remember one. I watched Franklin. Don't go anywhere near it. It is one of the worst films I think I've ever seen in my life.
I've never even heard
Brian
of Franklin.
And Brian Philippe just can't act.
I haven't even heard of Franklin. What's Franklin?
I'm assuming it's comic based. It feels very comic based, but it's essentially a story which is, I don't even know how to explain this film. It's a story that's told in a current time frame and what you think is a future time frame, where a man is trying to find someone, and then there's another story about a guy who's trying to find this other person, and both of them are somehow connected, but you can't quite figure it out. And by the end of it, its story kind of seems to take on that this is happening in his mind, but it might not be in his mind, and it might be something that reoccurringly happens through time. Honestly, I just didn't care. By the time I got to the end of the film, I was like, this is the biggest piece of trash I've watched all year, and I now understand why it didn't even make it to cinemas. So, don't go and watch this film.
Oh, dear. Okay, Richard, what have you been watching?
Well, I've watched a few things. Apart from one of the films that we're reviewing this week, The Thing, which I saw on Monday, I've seen two really, really interesting films that are coming out in Australia, at least, over the next 2 months. The first one, both of them harrowing, and I saw them one night after the other. The first one is We Need to Talk About Kevin, which is a film by an English director named Lynn Ramsey, and it's got Tilda Swinton in it. Right. As well as John C. Reilly, reminding us why we thought he was a good actor in the first place.
Mm.
And a young boy. It's based on a novel. I think it's Lionel Shriver. I could be wrong. I think it's Lionel Shriver wrote the novel. I don't want to say too much about the narrative of it because it's a fractured narrative and you find out more as you go along. It's a really hard-hitting film. It's one of those movies that emotionally punches you in the gut. And leaves you a bit winded afterwards. So it's a tough film to watch, but I strongly suspect that if the Academy can stomach all of it, Swinton is a surefire bet for a Best Actress nomination.
Nice.
This year. The other film I saw, which has been getting quite a bit of buzz, is Pedro Almodovar's new film, The Skin I Live In.
I want to see this.
Now, it's definitely worth seeing. It's coming out in Australia on Boxing Day. That's the 26th of December for the non-Commonwealth countries. I'm actually embargoed from saying too much about the film. I can talk about the film and say that I thought it was great, but I can't tell you much about the plot details because the director and the producers have actually explicitly requested that we reveal as little as possible about that.
Wow.
Because there are some major twists throughout the film, some that you will see coming, others that they deliberately try and
throw you
throughout it by setting up one story and then really not then really surprising you with where that story actually goes. So if you've seen a Pedro Almodovar film before, you know that these things can sometimes be batshit crazy.
And that's a technical term.
That's a technical term. That's I'm trademarking.
That term was created just for Pedro Almodovar. So
yeah, exactly right. Him and his kind. But no, it's a fabulous film.
But you were saying it's it's harrowing.
It is. It's not as harrowing as it's harrowing in a different reason. So we need to talk about Kevin. Skin I Live In is one of the translations. It's the common translation. In some places it's turning up as The Skin I Inhabit, which is probably less seen at the moment. I won't even attempt to pronounce the original Spanish title. But it's Antonio Banderas is in this film. giving one of his performances of a lifetime. Absolutely.
Oh, he's, dude, it's so, you know, it's so good to hear that, because I've been worried about his career progression.
Well, I mean, we'll see him in Australia in Pussy Boots before.
Oh, yeah, which
out.
Is definitely, you know, Oscar.
All I need is the boots.
Like, yeah, look, Puss in Boots is one of the best things in the last few Shrek films.
Well, absolutely, but I'm saying that out of the roles that he's produced, it's sort of like, you know, sort of intense characters and, you know, Desperado, and then kind of like slow progression towards Spy Kids and Puss in Boots. It's like, would you just act? This is just even once.
This is him back in Spain. This is basically back him in Spanish language doing what he does best.
Yeah,
and,
absolutely.
Creating a really intense character.
Good. Good.
And so if you're a fan of his, or were a fan of his, or a fan of Pedro, definitely get along and see this.
System Kill needs the title of your first choice again, Richard.
Oh, the first film I saw was We Need to Talk About Kevin.
We Need to Talk About Kevin. There you go.
Yep. And the other film I watched last night, was one of, favorite of yours, David, Howard the Duck.
Oh, yes, it's on the list.
Yeah, that is a broken film.
In just all saying. The right ways.
I'm going to let you believe that, Dave.
Look, it's Leah Thompson. I can't complain.
It's Leah Thompson in lingerie, basically flirting with a duck.
Yeah.
There is everything wrong, and she even pulls out a little duck condom.
That's exactly
out.
What it sounds like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love when she even pulls out the little duck condom, which isn't in a packet, mind you.
Yeah, no, I wondered about that. I don't think they have the same laws on
I would also imagine that there wouldn't really be that many need for duck condoms. So I imagine that they probably
Wrong in every way.
Package that shit up, you know, just throw it out. It's just, you know, that's how they work. I don't know, I'm just reeling. Keep going.
Yeah. I think if you stop and think too much about...
Sorry, when I start thinking about duck condoms, I just get lost in them. take that any way you want.
All right, so the question is, Richard, after watching it again, what were your thoughts?
You know, I didn't think it was that bad. You know, it's definitely got its flaws. And, God, I've forgotten the name of the actor. He was the principal in...
it was Mr. Rooney from Ferris Bueller's. Didn't he go to jail for having pornographic pedophilia material?
Yeah. Pretty much, yeah.
He
This movie would make you believe it.
Well, it's not only that, man. It's also that creepiness that, you know, sort of you just look at the guy and you're like, there's something wrong with you. And when you hear something like that, you're like, that makes
right,
a
he was
lot
a pedophile, of course.
Yeah. He was...
allegedly.
What was his name? I'm looking him up for us right now. I can't believe I've forgotten his name. He was in so many films of the 80s. He was also in Amadeus. He was around in everything at one point. He was in Beetlejuice.
What was that?
He was in Beetlejuice.
He was in Beetlejuice.
Oh, yeah, he was too.
I mean, he's God. It's I wish I could remember his name as well.
I'm there. Geoffrey Jones.
There you go. Well, he was.
At him now.
The photo of him now on Internet Movie Database is creepy.
That's terrifying.
But he's still acting. He's in he's got a movie coming out next year.
Oh, dude, and he was in What's Your Caddy?
Wow.
That's right. He was in Deadwood, and he was very good in Deadwood.
Yeah.
So, look, he was a stable. And look, his personal life aside and the strange things he might have done, because I don't think he was actually caught being a pedophile, just with underage pornography.
That's so much better.
I'd rather that than him actually diddling kids.
That's true.
So, look, like anything.
Only just, man.
Only just. Yeah. But the point is that as long as he's done his time and he has theoretically reformed and he's not doing it anymore, then we shouldn't hold it against him now. It's like he's paid his debt, you know?
There we go.
That's a whole different argument for a whole different show, though. So, because there are people who say that there's the sex offenders lists and all this sort of stuff. It's like, I don't know. There's a lot of grief on both sides of that.
Well, he's appearing. His next movie, he doesn't seem to have suffered too much for it. He's not playing a major role, but his next thing is a TV movie, admittedly. But what a TV movie. It's called Hemingway and Gellhorn, and it's about Ernest Hemingway and a World War II correspondent, Martha Gellhorn.
Right.
And this thing stars Clive Owen, Nicole Kidman, Robert Duvall, Parker Posey, Tony Shalhoub. It's Mark Pellegrino's in it. It's David Strathairn, Peter Coyote. It seems like it's going to be a major television event next year. So He seems to have bounced back on his feet fairly quickly.
I'm just trying to see, when was he arrested? When did that all fall down? Because I'm trying to look at his filmography, and he doesn't seem to have taken more than a year off at any time.
Well, his last film was 2007, and his next one's 2012. So there's a five-year gap there.
So it would have been around that time. I thought it was earlier than that he got done.
Well, no, I think it must have been recently. Unless he's anyway.
By the way, just for the listeners out there, that isn't a race course behind Josh. That's actually a circular saw. It sounds like cars going by. there is some construction.
My neighbors are rebuilding their house, and we love them for it.
It's nice. Anyway, we'll keep going. So is that everything you've been watching, Richard?
Yeah, pretty much. It ended with Howard the Duck.
Well, that's one way to end things. This week, I got a chance to see Shark Knight. Less said, the better. I wasn't
moving right along.
Yeah, it's great, right, Dave?
Yeah, great. Look, everybody's going to have their own opinion of it. It didn't float my boat. Let's say that. You know, let's go that far. I can't say too many horrible things about it just at this point because I have an interview coming out.
so better or worse than Battle of Los Angeles?
Oh, no, I'd say it's better than that. I mean, Battle of Los Angeles is a whole new level of bad. Interestingly enough...
Hey, Susan, we're watching that tonight.
Interestingly, one of the films I saw this week was Burning Man, which is the new Australian film. And the reason I bring it up is because, of course, I also interviewed Jonathan Teplitsky, the director, and the star, Johanna Nowolowski, yesterday. And they were both very nice, but that's not the reason why I'm bringing it up. The reason why I'm bringing it up is that I actually, Josh, this is going to be controversial, but I think I may have found the film that turned me around on Australian films.
Oh, wonderful. I'm looking forward to it, man. You're not the first person that's told me about this one.
Yeah, no, you rewatched Baz Luhrmann's Australia, didn't you?
No. No. Burning Man, it's interesting. The thing that's interesting about it is that... what Richard was saying about the films that he saw about the fragmented nature and not wanting to give anything away about the plot, I'm listening to you talk. I'm going, boy, you're describing Burning Man. everything there is Burning Man. Burning Man is written in a completely fragmented way. And so the script is actually told all over the place. And as the film progresses, it slots together. And it does it seamlessly. It's really, really well put together. And it's interesting because nobody seems to want to... That's a really interesting sound in the background.
We had beans during the break.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. it's really interesting because nobody seems to actually want to talk about... Even in the official press kit that I got for the interview, nobody wants to talk about what the actual plot is. They dance around it because they don't really want to spoil surprises in it. So I'm not going to spoil it for you. And even in the interview, we were very careful to dance around plot points. So
Popshot in the chat room says that Red Dog and The Hunter were good Aussie films. Couldn't agree more. I think Red Dog is for me one of the films that turned me around on Australian films.
Okay, and I'm going to say that I actually haven't seen Red Dog or The Hunter.
It's great. The Hunter is... it is also a great film, and people will have problems with it. It's a very definitely, deliberately paced film, but Willem Dafoe is terrific in it. Joseph in the chat rooms talked about the Burning Man posters, which are terrific.
Yeah, they're
really good, and it is actually a famous artist who's done them, and I've forgotten his name for the moment. Someone mentioned it to me the other night. It's had a really terrific buzz around it, Burning Man, so I am looking forward to seeing it.
No, it is, and when it comes out, it is well worth going to see. Everybody should go see it. It is, I will just say that everything that the synopsis said, like, as an example, I just want to read you very quickly, because, you know, I find out I'm going to go do this interview, so I go immediately to IMDb, and I go, let's have a look at what they're saying about it and so forth. And I just want to read to you very quickly the synopsis for this film according to IMDb. And I want you to remember this, burn this into your brain. So when you see Burning Man, I want you to think about this synopsis, okay? They say, an English chef with a chic restaurant at Bondi Beach trying to put his life and his relationship with his son back on track while surrounded by women. And reason why I'm going to say that is because that is so not this movie. That is about 1% of this movie. So it's just a really interesting plot. And when I read that, I went, oh my God, do I really have to see this? And I am glad to say that when I actually got to the interview, I looked at the Paramount rep, Misha, and I said, thank God, Misha, I liked the film, because if I hated the film, this would have been very uncomfortable. But no, I really, really liked it. So Burning Man is well worth having a look at. Also this week, I watched the animated film Batman Year One.
I've been wanting to watch this.
Which is fabulous. It is. Just look, whatever Marvel is doing for cinema, DC is doing for straight-to-video animated fare, because their animated fare just keeps getting better and better. And this is a really literal and beautiful adaptation of the four-issue miniseries Year One by Frank Miller. And it's really well put together, and it's well worth having a look at. Great cast as well. And the other thing I thought I'd bring up, because if Richard's going to end on a down, I'm going to end on a down too. I rewatched The Phantom, the Billy Zane film.
How is that a downer? I'm sorry.
It's not. It's The Phantom is not a good film.
And what was my downer?
It's a fantastic film.
Howard the Duck. My downer? It wasn't a downer.
It's not so much of a downer, but I think I understand what he means.
Yeah, it's like you go from greatness down to Howard the Duck. I'm going from greatness down to The Phantom. So.
Yeah. No, I placed Howard the Duck and Pedro Almodovar on the same level.
Oh, well, wow.
Yeah, don't quote me on that.
You mustn't misinterpret me, though. I actually have Howard the Duck on the GWBL. I love Howard the Duck, but all for the wrong reasons. or for the right reasons, depending on which way you look at it. Absolutely. But yes, no, The Phantom, in rewatching it again, this is the 1996 Simon Winsor film. For those who don't know, he's the director of the new Australian film, The Cup, which is supposed to be, by all reports, not very good. He didn't do such a good job with The Phantom. Billy Zane is really...
Billy Zane.
It's a really flat film, but it does boast some really early performances, though. It's very interesting from things like Catherine Zeta-Jones and Christy Swanson. Not so early for Christy Swanson, but it's. I think she'd already done Buffy at that point, so the film version of Buffy. So it's not a great film, but it was kind of fun in its own right. But the one thing that is really memorable about The Phantom is that Treat Williams is awful as the bad guy.
He really is awful
as the bad guy. All right, that's my week. I also watched Thor on Blu-ray, which still looks great.
It's great, isn't it?
It's
have
great.
You listened to the commentary yet?
Not yet. I haven't had a chance.
Kenneth Brenner's commentary is probably one of the better commentaries I've heard on a disc in ages.
Oh, fantastic.
He's a bit of a tosser sometimes, but he just draws on so much, and very rare is it a one-person commentary can be as fascinating and as easy to listen as his is. And it's great because he pulls on his own acting experience and stuff. And I may have mentioned this last week, actually, but it's just a really, really good commentary. So check that out if you have a chance.
Yeah, no, I will check that. I watched all of the featurettes. It's a good package.
It's a good package. That's in my pants.
Sorry, someone had to go there.
Boy, that saw is getting worse and worse, isn't it? Hey, we'll push our way through.
I have a plan, so when we go to the next trailer, we will fix said problem.
Okay, well, we'll give that a try. Well, we're going to go to that trailer in just a minute.
We're shooting the saw guy, aren't we?
Yes, yeah, we're going to go kill him.
All right, well, we're going to go to the trailer in about 2 seconds because we're just going to do the rundown on this and then we'll go to trailer. Now, the rundown on our first feature film is The Thing. Directed by, now, I can't pronounce his name, so if anybody would like a shot at this.
Oh, yeah, I can do it. Hang on.
Okay.
Hang on. I've got to bring it up, though, first, so I can pronounce it as I'm looking at it.
Okay, you're going to do your best, Scandinavian accent for this?
I could.
Jesus Christ, that is a name.
Isn't it?
Matthias van Heijningen.
Junior.
Heijningen.
Junior.
Heijningen Junior. Who is the son of Matthias van Heijningen.
Very good. Good. A valiant effort on that. All right. So The Thing, directed by that guy, is written by Eric.
Matthias van Heijningen, yeah. Junior.
Eric Heisserer. Heisler. And based on the short story by Who Goes There by John W. Campbell Jr. There's a lot of juniors.
The son of John W.
There's a lot of juniors in this thing. It stars Mary Elizabeth Winstead, Joel Edgerton, Ulrich Thompson, and Eric Christian Olsen. And there was also a whole bunch of Norwegian people who I cannot pronounce any of their names. So,
including Andervale Ekinoyoye Agbedje.
Some would believe that this would be a Norwegian co-production, I think.
And Paul Brownstein and Trond Ebsen Seim and Kim Bubbs and Jorgen Langhaar.
All right, it's enough. A great collection of names.
I just wanted to get down to Jorgen.
Jorgen. Okay, paleontologist Kate Lloyd has traveled to Antarctica to join a Norwegian scientific team that has stumbled across an extraterrestrial ship buried in the ice. They discover an organism that seems to have died in the crash eons ago, but it is about to wake up. Kate must join with American pilot Carter to try and keep it from killing them off one at a time. And in this vast, intense land, a parasite that can mimic anything it touches will pit human against human as it tries to survive and flourish. The Thing serves as a prequel to John Carpenter's classic 1982 film of the same name. And this is a modified synopsis from Universal Pictures, which was a whole lot longer than that.
Oh, it's huge.
Yeah, it was a very long synopsis, so I shortened it right down. Yes, so for those who haven't gathered by now, this is a prequel. We've been debating until we saw the film, all the way up until the day we saw the film, we were debating whether this was a remake or a prequel. And it is a prequel. So, and it literally ends exactly where the first one picks up. So it is...
Spoilers, Dave.
Well, I don't think that's a spoiler, dude, if it's a prequel, you know what I mean? All right, so let's look at the trailer here. And we will come back and discuss the thing.
48 hours ago, we found something quite remarkable.
What'd they find?
There's a structure.
In Antarctica.
And a specimen.
Really?
Touching down.
This is Kate Lloyd's Columbia Paleontology.
Let me show you why you flew 10,000 miles. We estimate it's been here 100,000 years.
I'm going to take a tissue sample.
Do you really think that's a good idea?
Yes, I do.
You, my friends, will all be immortalized as the people who made this discovery.
Did you hear that? Somebody was attacked.
But it seems everyone is fine.
Either someone miraculously healed themselves, or someone is not who they say they are.
What was it doing to him?
It's imitating his cells. I think this thing copies its prey and then hides inside it.
What are you saying?
Not all of us are human. It could be any of us. We can't let this thing leave.
If it makes it out of here, millions of people could die.
I love that use of the music at the end.
During that incredibly long... Whoa! Jesus. During that incredibly long trailer, we've now moved to Josh's bedroom.
Oh, cool. With your pants on or off? And there's a thunder collapse again.
Yeah, no, that was just me.
You don't have to answer that, Josh.
No, we don't. yes, no. Well, in the hopes that we will now get a much quieter situation without less buzz soaring.
Excellent. Before we actually start this review, Joseph in our chat room has asked, does it borrow at all from the 50s version? I only ask because it seems that it borrows mostly from the 80s version. It is a direct prequel to the 80s version. So it's not related to the 50s version at all. And it is based on Campbell's book or his novel, his short story. So it is literally a prequel. So the the motifs and everything follow on from that, to give you an idea. Okay. Let's we'll kind of scooch through this one pretty fast, I think, because I think there's going to be a lot more talking about Red State somehow. But let's just get our first general opinions. Josh, what did you think? You're the resident horror fan?
Dude, as a fan of the series, I thought that it was really all right. I would love to give it more credit than that, but being the fact that it's a prequel, I think everything that it did prequel-wise was fantastic. Everything about connecting the two stories together was great. I think the story they wove between it was really good. I just think that where they take it in the third act,
it's definitely third act.
Third act is definitely not what I think they should have done with it. And my reasoning behind this is the fact that I think they take it to a place which needs more definition if you're going to spend time in it.
Yeah,
it's like they go there too quickly and they don't cover enough well they're there, and you're kind of the whole time going, what the hell is going on? And that is my only problem with the film. It's like the first two-thirds are just really well done. They're all done in the same style. They feel very much in the same world. They feel quite admirably at the right time. They've handled things quite cleverly, like the treatment of the women in the thing and the situation, that most people will just ignore them throughout. And I mean, like, you know, we're talking about an earlier time frame, so, you know, that sort of stuff would have been the case. Everybody was saying they didn't want to see a woman at all in this film, which I never quite understood. I think that's mildly
I think it's because the first film, the 82 film, is so male centric.
Yeah, but still, I don't understand why that gives people the right to say there shouldn't be men in the prequel. Like, I don't understand the reasoning.
I had no problem with there being a woman on there.
Exactly, and I thought that she did a fantastic job. I think that the other little tiny gripe I have with this film is that I don't think they handled the first one is so good at handling the way that people interact against each other. And I mean, that's one of the highlights of the film, and one of the reasons that it's one of my favorite horror experiences is because of that psychological torment between the people. And I mean, it is there, but it's done much quicker because this is much more action orientated. Yeah. And I would have appreciated a little bit more time spent on that.
Agreed.
Richard.
Right. Yeah. Well, I'm almost 100% with Josh on this one. I have my problems with the film are in exactly the same places. But having said that, and I actually went home and immediately watched the original thing after having watched the thing. I went, let's distinguish them.
Did you watch it with Susan?
I watched it with Susan, yeah. Nice. So nice. I went home and watched John Carpenter's The Thing.
Right.
After watching The Thing, as we shall distinguish them from this point onwards. Because it is interesting that they have made a direct sequel and just called it The Thing.
That was actually going to be one of my points, which was I think that this film is going to suffer by its name.
But then again, it might suffer by its name, but then if you think of this as two halves of the whole, then the whole movie together is The Thing.
Yeah, problem is I can't think of it as two halves.
You know, they should have given it some poxy subtitle like The Thing Dominion or something.
Or The Thing The Beginning.
Exactly, yeah. But the thing is, everything else about it works incredibly well. It's as Josh said, it harks back to the 80s incredibly well. It plays on the same themes of isolation, plays on the same themes of bodily invasion, which is a really icky kind of thing to deal with. The original one had that kind of, putting it in context, 1982, when the original one came out, and you're probably going to touch on this, David, it was the same year that E.T. came out. It
certainly was.
2 weeks before. And I think the other film that came out at the same time was Blade Runner.
Yep.
And so those three movies within the space of 2 weeks came out. And The Thing wasn't very well critically received at the time, or box office wise.
No, The Thing actually, I think it's fair to say that The Thing completely died.
It did. And and there was a quote from John Carpenter, which when I was writing something on the original Thing yesterday, I came across where he actually said, and I'm quoting here, "The movie was hated even by science fiction fans. They thought that I'd betrayed some kind of trust and the piling on was insane." In the 30 years since then, The Thing has become, rightly so, considered to be a legitimate classic of the genre.
Yep.
So you're coming into The Thing prequel with this preconception as to what it's going to be or not going to be. And I think what they've done is made a really, really good attempt at staying true to the spirit of the original.
Mm-hmm.
And Josh, you said something to me on the night, which was, I think, really apt, that they didn't make you hate the original at all, which is so true of so many sequels and prequels.
Exactly. We spend so much time with these people that are apparently faithful to what they're working with, and so many times we end up failing because these people think that because they've been given the rights to do this, that they somehow have the rights to mess with the mythology. And it's always been a huge issue with me, and that was actually – that was my main – fear going into this film was that someone was going to turn around and open up a door into some knowledge about something that would affect the first one, like something that would actually make me think about whatever it was from that film every time I watched the original. And they really did a good job at avoiding that.
That said, in some ways, this is my least favorite kind of prequel. In the same way that the Star Wars prequels were pointless. It's this American obsession, it seems, with explaining everything. Now, the original thing, you when I was watching it, and you can literally lop the credits out and watch these films back to back. They do work as one film. But if you there's a great line in the original thing where they turn up to the Norwegian station, which is where this prequel is set, and they see everything's been burnt down. There's horribly charred corpses there that look like they're possibly human, possibly something else. Over the course... And someone says the question, what the hell happened here? And this film attempts to answer that question.
Exactly. And it didn't need to be because we know...
It sort of lessens the impact. Now that we know exactly what happened there, our imaginations can't run wild with what had gone on at this camp. And as you're watching the original, as you're watching John Carpenter's thing, it slowly becomes apparent what the hell happened there because the same thing's happening to their
That's
camp.
Exactly what I was going to say, Richard, is the fact that we didn't need to know what happened at that time because by the mere fact of the events that unfold at the American base, we know what happened in that Norwegian camp.
Interestingly enough, though, in some ways this kind of worked because of that for me, because one thing that I loved is that they actually they may say that you don't, but I actually believe that when you watch this film, you have to have watched the original, because one thing that I really gave them credit for is they didn't waste very much time explaining what the thing does. Basically, they just leap head forward in, and it just starts affecting the entire camp at about twice the speed of the original one. So it has kind of modernized it in that way that we are very obsessed with not doing anything in a languid style. But I thought that it was done really well. Like, I thought their approach to making this a faster thing worked for me, because as someone that has seen the original, I don't need the wasted time with it hiding in the background. Essentially, this thing is kind of learning as it goes. So it's sort of like by the time it hit the second camp, it knew to kind of hide a little better than it did when it hit this time, because when it hit this time, it's just come out. It's just literally leaped out of that ice and is just trying to survive. And I like that. It was a different feeling, which is why I kind of give this film credit for becoming its own thing.
That's a good point.
Okay. Dave, my turn. I actually agree with most of the points that you're saying. I think this film was far better than it deserved to be. it was a film that really probably shouldn't have even existed. And the fact that Universal decided that they wanted to make this film and the fact that they made it a prequel rather than a remake, I do respect. And I think the film actually was enjoyable. It was fun. It was... I still think to this day, though, that it I only saw it a week ago. I still think of the same thing that I thought when I saw it, which was in 10 years' time, we'll still be watching John Carpenter's The Thing. We won't be watching this.
And oddly enough, completely disagree with you. And I won't cut you off for long, Dave. I just want to say that this film, when it comes out on Blu-ray, will be watched back-to-back for me. Not because I love it really much, but as a horror fan, I believe any horror series that doesn't actually destroy The Thing should be watched as a group.
Well, see, I look at it this way, and I go, the things that made... The original thing for me, for me personally, the John Carpenter's The Thing is actually one of my favorite films. And I look at that and I go, some of the things that make it that way are the fact that the character interplay is brilliant. Each of those characters is actually, for the short period of time they're on screen, which is, we're just under 2 hours here, we actually get to know everyone in that camp. And we know them very well. They're all very distinct people. And we get to care about all those people. I don't know who any of these Norwegians are. And a lot of them were basically just variations of a theme. And it's not the fault of the actors. It's just a fault of the fact that they didn't give anything time to grow. They didn't give. They were right there in the action. They just wanted to get you straight into it. And the only people we really got to know, funnily enough, are the two Americans. You know what I mean?
And so, look, you know, I mean, I think that's true. I mean, look, Mary Elizabeth Winstead, it should be pointed out, is very good in this.
Yeah, she is. She is.
She is. She recalls, and because this is set in the 80s, and this kind of harks back to what you were saying, Josh, about the role of women in the 80s, let's not forget, around the time the original was made, we had strong female action people like Sigourney Weaver in the Alien film around that time. And to me, there's a little bit of that coming out here too, which that kind of like
it's they instantly someone so actually says
someone actually says in the Norwegians are talking at one point and says she's very smart, isn't she? Yep, and she's in charge now.
Yeah,
and exactly. And they all recognize that they're smart. You know, they realize what's going on there, and so they do paint her as a strong person. And I don't think unreasonably so. She's been selected because she's quite knowledgeable.
To coin the term that was probably quite popular back then, she's a firecracker. She just when she needs to get something done, she will just brick wall against people until she gets what she wants.
Although and she is more of the MacReady character than Joel Edgerton is.
Yeah, I was going to say Joel Edgerton, I thought was okay, but nothing special. He didn't stand out for me in any way, shape, or form. She was the star of this film. There's just
absolutely.
I mean, Mary Elizabeth Winstead, who I actually quite like, and her star is rising, and she's going to be. I think she is going to be quite a big star in time. She's been in several films lately, and this is like her first. This is probably one of her first standout starring roles.
It's the first time she really doesn't share the limelight.
No, that's right. And it's a big film. It's not, I mean, she did share, she was the headlining star of that dance movie a couple of years ago, but who saw it? You know what I mean? So this is like her first super big film, high profile. And I think it's going to do her a lot of favors. And I think she is good. There is a lot to be said about her. I think, as I say, Joel Edgerton was a non-event. He was there. We got to know him, but he was, I mean, I look at the original film and I go, there's MacReady, there's Knowles, there's Windows, there's Childs. We know them all. You know what I mean? And we know.
We should point out, though, Dave, that you're a massive John Carpenter fan.
I am a massive John Carpenter fan, but even so, this is probably, this for me actually is one of his better films, too. This stands out as a film that is, in some ways, very un-Carpenter. It's not Halloween. It's not
Assault and Prison. It ended a terrific run, though, for Carpenter.
It did. It did. And it was like the end of his roller coaster ride, because he came to an abrupt end with Big Trouble in Little China shortly after this. So and that kind of bombed on him.
What he was always good at and was taking that group of characters, placing them in isolation somewhere or cutting them off somehow. Mm. So we're talking about Assault from Precinct 13. We're talking about The Fog.
Absolutely.
Any of those films where he does that and isolates them, develops this little group, and then has some sort of unstoppable force trying to come
and this,
together.
And really the original film...
It was what John Carpenter did the best, in my opinion, absolutely. Was that psychological nature of all his horror films, which was that it was more about how these people were going to survive themselves than it was whatever the force was. The force was always... It was always you never knew what it was. I mean, with the thing, you've got it being a changing monster. With Assault from Precinct 13, they're kind of nameless,
the faceless,
you know,
gang.
Bad guys. Yeah, and the Fog is the same. It's like it was never about what was out there. That was just a reality. It was how the people interacted with themselves, and that's, it's such a shame.
That's the key here, is what we're trying to get at, Josh. Exactly what you just said. It's about how the people react to the situation. In this prequel, it's about the monster. It's not about the way the people react. And I want to see more about the way the people are reacting than the monster.
Well, interestingly enough, Dave, it's kind of why I'm actually glad it didn't, because the original film will always have those characters. It's always got the memories and the meanings. This is almost like doing a comic book before a movie. You know, it's like it's the fill-in. It's the background. It's how it got to where it was. It's not so much about a story. You're not trying to create your own story in this world. It's more about the thing. Mm-hmm. Which is the title, which makes sense of why they chose it.
I still don't think the title makes sense. I still think that it needed to differentiate itself in some way, some little way. It needed to do that, because I think there is going to
have John Carpenter's name in front of it.
I think there is going to always be confusion when people say, "Is it a sequel? Is it a prequel? Is it a remake?"
Yeah, Universal will find some clever way of boxing these up.
Yeah. All right. Look, let's round this up because we got another film. And say, I'm going to say that, look, I do recommend the film. I think it's a good film. I think, as I said, it is a lot better than I thought it was going to be.
I think the greatest compliment this movie can get is to actually win you over to even say that.
Well, and the greatest compliment I can say to this film is go see this film, because it'll make you want to watch the original.
Exactly. So, and that's essentially all I wanted it to do. I just wanted a film that filled in a few blanks, just like me reading the comic book that comes after the film.
I think the original. This film suffers from the same problem that I think all prequels suffer from, which is the fact that there is a slight lack of tension because we know what's going to happen. And if you've seen the original film, and this goes for the Star Wars prequels, goes for anything, anytime you're dealing with a prequel, it's one of the reasons why I don't like prequels very much, because you sit there and go, I know what's going to happen. I know what has to happen to make this film work. You know what I mean? Because I know where it's going to pick up in the next film. So it does suffer a little bit of that prequelitis that prequels...
But I actually think it really did. It does suffer that prequelitis, but I think it does actually really, really cleverly use the time it does have on screen to build a pretty decent thriller, a pretty decent horror sci-fi film within that. And with the exception of the weakish conclusion that we've already spoken about, I think that because I think it got to a point in the film where it thought, oh, we have to finish here, let's just fill in some space for the last half hour and then get there eventually.
I think we can all agree on one thing,
but I would
though.
Recommend it.
Yeah. Yes. I think we can all recommend on one thing, and I think Dave and I had a huge issue with this. I didn't really talk to Thing about this, Richard. So I just totally
forgot. I'm now Thing.
Anyway, was the fact that the conclusion of Winstead's character is actually a little bit...
I didn't want to go into that because it's kind of spoilerish, but yeah.
No, dude, again, we don't have to go into it. It's just very unsatisfying.
Yes,
because
it is.
Like, it's very obviously either a plug for a possible next story.
Prequel.
Yeah, it's like a prequel sequel.
Like a spin-off.
Like, and I don't like that at all. But like, it's also just bad filmmaking. It's like, for a film that's so incredibly tight, it just seems to be really...
There are loose ends it doesn't tie up, that's for sure.
Yeah, yeah. And it's such a huge one, because it's not like it's happening in the background where you have to watch it a few times to think it over. It kind of fades away with a finger poking at you. You know what I mean? It's sort of like, and there's no resolution.
Yeah, but that could happen. Whatever you're... That a loose end could theoretically happen off screen. Our story ends there and it carries on into the next.
I'll put it this way: when the credits started to roll on this film, my first reaction was, "You've got to be fucking kidding me! That's it."
Yeah.
Luckily, the action continues through the credits. And that completely
don't
makes
go away
don't go away. The credits are actually played over more of the film. So, but when the first credit hit the screen and said directed by, I went, are you fucking kidding me? That's it?
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, yeah. But thankfully they did save their asses on that one with that credit sequence that goes on.
Yes,
so,
absolutely. Say, I wonder if they did that after they'd finished shooting and thought, no, we have to do that.
We have to do that.
Yeah.
All right, we're going to have to move on because I just realized we're an hour into the show already, dudes.
Yeesh.
All right, let's get on to... let's just conclude that. I say, yeah, I do recommend it, but it's not... I'll put it this way. It's not a candle to the original, but it is a good film. That's my opinion.
Yeah. My opinion is that as a fan of many and numerous horror series throughout time, I think any film that can stand up this well to something that powerful deserves to become part of its general feeling. So it's like I will be watching them back to back from now on.
Cool. All right. All right, and with that, we're going to move on to Red State, where we're going to have more disagreements. All right, so Red State is written and directed by Kevin Smith. Yes, that Kevin Smith. It stars Michael Parks, Melissa Leo, John Goodman, Michael Angarano, Nicholas Braun, Kyle Gallner, and Kerry Bichet. Red State unfolds in a small town dominated by fundamentalist preacher Aben Cooper. It tells the story of three high school boys who, on their way to an internet-arranged meeting with a woman, end up crossing paths with Cooper. The encounter sets in motion a series of events that causes all hell to break loose, and the source of that is Smodcast Pictures. So that is their official synopsis on this, and it's pretty okay. It only really describes the first half of the film, and that's okay.
It's the only bit worth watching. No, sorry, go on.
Thank
go on.
You.
Whoa, that's controversial. Let's watch the trailer and we'll come back and talk about this. Here's Red State.
What is this, man?
It's like Craigslist for people who want to get fucked.
I thought Craigslist was Craigslist for people who want to get fucked. Right.
We're getting late, boys.
She wants all three of us at the same time.
It's going to be like fucking my mom.
This is what happens to parents block porn sites, man. They make socially backwards kids.
Bet you boys want to get up to the devil's business, don't you?
Get drinking, because I ain't drinking alone. And I don't let no man in me unless he's got at least two beers in.
Yes, ma'am.
Fuck!
Guys, is that you, Travis?
Welcome, family.
Good evening.
Good evening, Grandpa.
I hate wickedness in America. Rampant fornication, adultery, abortion, flagrant sexuality. Everywhere.
Hey, you fucking bitch, let me the fuck out of here!
And it's up to the righteous to curb the spread of this disease. Do you mind taking a chill on that enough? Gonna get grown up in here.
Send the sinner straight to hell. Send the sinner straight to hell.
God doesn't love you. Less fear.
Yes, sir. It's dawn here now, but we can be fully mobilized and on site in an hour.
Come out with your hands up, and you will not be harmed. Repeat, you will not be harmed.
I think it's the use of the word repeat that makes this work every time.
I never saw the hand of God so clearly in all my born days.
Those government people, they're gonna kill you too. You get down on your knees and pray.
You said this was gonna be a simple in and out, sir. Simple just shit itself.
Talk about fear of God. You better believe I fear God.
How much do you think a cross like that costs?
You mean the dollars or common sense?
Okay.
Hello.
Hello. All right, so that's Red State. That was the second trailer for Red State that came out. The first trailer gave nothing away, and that trailer gives everything away. So... go figure.
Don't watch that trailer.
All right. So who are we going to start with on this one?
Well, should we start with positive, David?
Yeah, let's start with you, Dave. I think that's a good idea.
All right. Let's just start with me. There's been some criticism against this film that it's too wordy. There's been criticism against this word that it's anti-religion. There's been criticisms against this film for a lot of things. I'm actually going to say that that I actually really, really liked this film. One of the things I actually really liked about this film was the fact that it was too wordy. One of the reasons we go see Kevin Smith films is for his dialogue. His dialogue was the star of Clerks. His dialogue was the star of Chasing Amy. His dialogue was the star of many of his films, and it's the star here. I mean, this film is about ideas, and it's about fundamentalism, and it's about fundamentalism on both the religious and the secular side, and how that can clash, such as in real life with things like Waco. And I think he's actually stitched together a very interesting film that doesn't play with the rules. It doesn't do a typical three-act form. It doesn't conform to the way that we think the film should be played out. And I think to his credit, and as a basically a swan song, I know there's still the hockey film to come, I think it's a really interesting way to round out and bring his career to an end, trying something radically different for him. And I really enjoyed it. And to say it's a horror film is completely wrong. It's got some horrific ideas in it, but this film is about the actors and it's about the script. And the actors are superb. I mean, Michael Parks is just amazing. There's a lot of talk about the fact that the sermon scene in the middle, which is about 10 minutes long, was cut from 18 minutes. And I really would like to see the full 18-minute sermon. I could watch that. I could watch him deliver that sermon for 18 minutes. It is mesmerizing. I highly recommend it. I don't think it's going to be for everybody. And I understand why it's got 50% on Rotten Tomatoes. It has split critics down the middle. It has split them to ideological ideas. It is split people down on theological ideas. It has split people down on the fact that it's not a typical film. And I think it's a daring film, and I liked it a lot. You guys.
I'll go first, because yeah. I think you've got the harshest out of the three of us. I definitely think as a film, I agree with most of the things Dave says. I think that it does take some very interesting directions. It's very Kevin Smith in the way it's written, the fact that you don't establish necessarily characters that will be main characters. He definitely likes to avoid standard protocols when it comes to film writing, in the fact that there are people all over this film. Like this, when this film starts to get messy, it gets messy. Like people die left, right, and center. You know, characters that you don't think will be important are important. Characters you do think are important disappear. They're gone in 2 seconds flat. And I love that about the film. And as you said, Dave, one thing that I agree with you with is that this film is balls to the wall action paced.
Yeah.
Like
the second half. Once the
first bullet basically fires, from then on the pace picks up and the pace becomes more and more intense as it goes along. And I think shooting wise, for three quarters of it, I think it's brilliant. I think, like you said, the Parks character is fantastic. He's definitely got that concept down. It does make you kind of squirm in your seat at times at some of the subject matter they cover and some subject matter that might sit closer than you think to yourself. You know, like as a person, like things that you might morally or immorally, you know, disagree with or agree with. It's like this film definitely does pull emotions from you, and he's done a great job at doing that. I think the third act is intensely flawed. Like, the more I've run over it in my mind, the more I've kind of analyzed it, I've gone, I really hate the way this film ends. And it's only because I don't think the resolution is that well handled, and you can really tell that there was a lot of editing done over the course of this film due to the fact that it almost feels like he's never really been that good, in my opinion, with endings. I've never really found him that good at that, and this is another example of that. It's like the last speech is too long, in my opinion, and I didn't like the direction it went. And again, I know that that's a personal feeling, and I know everyone's not going to share that view.
See, whereas I disagree with you, because I actually really love that. I love that the conclusion to this film I loved, so...
Yeah, well, again, and like I had already said, it's like it's not going to be everybody's view, but it's like it is where the film falls down to me. There are so many different ways to finish that ending and do it a bit more powerfully. I just feel that it kind of just tapers off into a nothing. But again, that would be my only real gripe. Apart from that, I think it's a really well-handled film, and also definitely one of the films to go see, if for no other reason, just to see something very unique.
Agreed. All right, Richard.
Round
one. Fight.
No, I think it would be unfair to say that I'm going to be incredibly harsh on this film, because I didn't hate it. I certainly don't hate this film. Just as a bit of quick background, I'm a massive Kevin Smith fan. I have been for a long time. I remember walking into a cinema completely. I certainly didn't see Clerks and Mallrats on their first run. I remember walking in and seeing Chasing Amy completely without any knowledge of it into a cinema here in Sydney, which no longer exists. And then just completely falling in love with it 5 minutes in. And I've been a massive fan since then. That was back in 1997. And I've followed him very closely ever since. I went into this film with a huge amount of anticipation because, like a lot of Smith fans, I was excited to see him doing something different. I'm one of those people who quite enjoyed Jersey Girl in as much as that I think it was a good departure for him.
Yeah, me too.
And I wanted to see him make more films of a mature ilk, as he did with that, but he didn't. He fell straight back on what he knew after that. Even though I think Clerks 2 is actually quite mature when compared to, say, you know, Mallrats or Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back. So I think that Red State is a film that Kevin Smith should be admired for, because he made a film that he wanted to make. He released it on his own terms. And he's been successful with that. So I think all those things need to be admired here. And I think he is making a far more mature film. And I think it's a real disappointment that he said that his next film is going to be his last film, even though it is a two-part film, because I think he is moving in the right direction finally. Having said all that, I had massive problems with Red State. I think that the first half hour or so is great. It's brilliant, in fact. There are moments of absolute genius in there. And I think that that scene you mentioned with Michael Parks, I think that Smith is a little too in love with that speech. And he does let it go on a little too long. He said it was cut down from 18 minutes. I think it could have been cut in half again.
Oh, I so disagree.
I know you do. But I just think that the problem with that scene is that eventually it sets it up so well. There's all this iconography around it. There's somebody draped in a sheet, and you're thinking, what the hell's going on there? Mm. You're thinking, there's a guy in a cage. You can only hear what's going on half the time. There's a speech going on. It is such a powerful scene. And then the problem is, and it's got you so tense, like a horror film would. Like it sort of harks back to those really gritty, grimy horror films of the 1970s. You know, your Texas Chainsaw Massacre, your Last House, Hills Have Eyes. That kind of, it has that real feeling to it. And then, to me, though, by the end of that speech, all that tension's been sapped away because the speech has just gone on too long. Now, I know, as you said, you sort of mentioned in your introduction, Dave, you go and see a Kevin Smith film for the dialogue. Absolutely. He's quite good at it. But I think that he may have been a little too in love with it here because he was going for another film, another feel, and he got stuck somewhere in the middle. And I think that after that speech, we have an action scene which does, and it barrels along after that. This is a film that's only 88 minutes, and a lot happens in that 88 minutes. But for me, once the shooting starts, and we saw where it's about to start, and that clip played at the start of the show, it to me, I kind of went numb halfway through that after a while, and you get to the ending. Now that ending is quite controversial because some people feel it's too talky. There was a point just before that where I think the film could have ended, and I certainly won't give any spoilers there. If the film had ended at that point, I would have walked out saying, fuck yes, Kevin Smith nailed that. To me, he's gone on one beat too long, but by the same token, the film's only 88 minutes, and I would have loved to have seen some of those characters fleshed out because there was certainly room to have a lot more detail fleshed out in some of those characters.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's like the shooting kind of just goes in one sort of like ripper or moment, and then that's it, where it's like, you know, it's interesting negotiation-wise how they kind of just go, all right, bag what's supposed to happen, let's just get in there and finish this. And I'm kind of like, oh, really? Like, I mean, I'm not quite negative on that, as you kind of are. But at the same time, I kind of agree. It would have been interesting to have a bit more play on what the characters' interactions would have been. But again,
look, and I should say, look, my review, this is my abbreviated version of my review. My full review is on my site, and I do. And I feel as though it's a lot more balanced than what I've been saying in the last 5 minutes. You're getting the negative things because someone had to be the negative voice in this conversation.
And also, you've done your positive things already, and that's the problem when you've already reviewed something. Absolutely. You usually tend to reflect on.
Exactly. I'm pulling out all the negatives here. Don't get me started on what's your number.
No, we talked about that last week. We don't need to do that again.
Which is the other film that was released this week in Australia.
Yeah.
I just think there have been so many great films that have talked about religion lately. And I'll mention a few of these because I don't mention them on my list this week. Higher Ground, which was a film that I talked about a few weeks ago. We've had Martha Marcy May Marlene, which is another film I had problems with, but it's another film about a cult. We had, to a lesser extent, we had Footloose. And these are all movies that kind of deal with religious extremism in America different ways. I know what he was going for in this film. I think he's almost there. I think it's a shame that he's stopping making films, because I think if he kept going down this path, he would actually be a filmmaker that would be admired by the people that have already dismissed him in a few years to come. Unfortunately, he's thrown his gauntlet down.
He's also done with those people.
He's done with those people. He doesn't care anymore. Yeah, and I admire him for taking that stance, and I admire all that stuff around it. And as I said, there is a lot to like about Red State. And like you, David, you can understand why 50% of people didn't like this film. I can completely understand why 50% of people love this film.
Absolutely.
You and our good friend David Longo came out of this saying just like over the moon about it.
Yeah, well, look, I actually said it's the tightest film that Kevin Smith has ever made. I mean,
and then by the time I went and saw it, it was your second viewing. I wasn't there with you, so I think there were, you know, and I wasn't. And don't get me wrong, I was really looking forward to this as well. But
I'm not as in love with Red State as much as Longo is. Let's be very clear. No. David Longo can see no fault in this film, and I will agree with you and with Josh that the last speech, there is a definite ending point, and he has one, it's like one paragraph too many, where basically you sit there and go, I just didn't need, there's actually an ending point, you see it, where they say thank you very much, it's over, and then it's like one more question is asked, and that last question didn't need to be asked. You know,
it's funny though, because John Goodman's character, who is the one of the last to appear on screen, is such a fascinating character. There's so much they could have done with him. And didn't. A lot of the negotiation stuff that Josh referenced, his character, he was a very conflicted character throughout that. It was kind of like, here are my problems. I have problems with this. You know, I have problems with doing this. Goes off and does it, and then it's never kind of referencing it. There's no more conflict. I think there was room for more conflict in that film. And conflict in a very amateur way was kind of put out with. I'm being careful about what I say.
We don't want to give spoilers on it because it really, for those who do like this film, you're going to get a lot out of
And look, you know, I have to stress so much that I don't want to be too negative on this film because I think it is worth seeing, and I think you should go and see it and make your own mind up about it because it is one to discuss. And as David, you said at the start, you're either going to have problems with the religious aspects of it, or you're going to have problems with the
filmmaking style,
the content of it, or the talking of it. For me, it was a narrative pacing problem.
Right.
But everyone's going to have.
And the fact is that we already knew from the get go that his narrative pacing was going to be a problem. The mere fact that he didn't have three acts. I mean, he changed. Right. He completely threw the rule book out to making a narrative story, and basically said.
And you know what? In the hands of a more capable filmmaker, I think that would have worked.
Yeah.
I don't think he's there yet to throw the rule book out. I think he still needs the rule book.
Although story-wise, I actually didn't mind the two-act structure, but that's all. I mean, we could go around and around on this. I actually quite liked the structure of this film. Yeah. I liked, but more importantly, for me, a lot of the things that drives me, there's two kinds of films I really like. There are films where you just sit there and go, oh, wow, it's a visual spectacle and it's fantastic, a la, you know, your Star Wars films or what have you. But really, when you get down to a character piece, and this comes back to that, the argument with The Thing and the prequel to The Thing again as well, which for me, a lot of it will be characters. It will be the writing of the characters. It will be the dialogue. It will be the story. And for me, if the characters don't work, if there is just nothing to the characters, then they don't have much of a film because you don't have anything to latch onto. And I really liked, I mean, I could sit there and I could have watched Michael Parks just speak for the entire hour and a half without the shootout at all. You know what I mean? Michael Parks was mesmerizing. And it's the same thing I have with the original Thing, which is the characters are so well-rounded in the original Thing and they're so memorable that when you get to the prequel, you kind of go, well, there's just nothing to latch onto because they're just not that interesting. You know what I mean?
I noticed none of us have mentioned Melissa Leo, who's a fine actress. And I think she's given very little to do in this film.
But I tell you what, I was really impressed with her as well, though, because the sign of a good actor is an actor who can basically just flip everything around and do something completely different. She is so, so opposite to what she was in The Fighter. She's working quite hard. It's a very, very, very understated performance, though.
I think it's a very underwritten performance.
It is a little bit underwritten as well, but it's also this. She's really sucked it back inside. It's very introverted. I've seen the film three times, and you actually, on multiple viewings, you start to watch her more, and you watch what she's doing. And because she is incredibly conflicted about what she's doing. She has that ideology. She has that belief. And I'm not talking about in the second half of the film. I'm talking about in the first half of the film. She looks disturbed at the fact that she's doing this to these boys.
Yeah, no, look, I think we're going to have to agree to disagree on this at this point.
So anyway, I think, as I say, it's an interesting film. Everybody should see it. Just be aware that 50% of those out there may not like it.
Yes. Yeah. No, it's definitely like the funny thing is when you said the 50% thing, that's kind of how I feel about the film, oddly enough. It's like I feel very 50-50 with this film. So what I don't like, I really don't like. What I really do like, I really do like. And it's like I almost feel like it's kind of a 50% film. It's like I feel that everything was there for a good film. I just think that it needed once or twice more over with someone else doing an edit, perhaps. Somebody with a fresh look at the film as opposed to – like. And I'm not being mean about this. It's actually not a criticism. It's just that the guy has just continually edited this again and again and again, trying to refine it. It's like it's almost like he needed to send it to someone else that he trusted and go, hey, man, have a look at this and just see what came back to him. Like just maybe somebody might have given him a few pointers going, yeah, look, dude, this is great. This is probably the best thing you've ever done.
It's interesting but you say that because I actually don't feel the film is too over-edited.
You don't?
No, I actually think the film is very tight in its editing. I think he knew what he wanted off the bat, and he's cut it to that. The only thing he's cut since Sundance was he cut down the speech. So I don't know if it is overly edited in your the way you're describing it. I think it's very tightly edited, but I think that's how he planned it to be.
All right, cool. Again, we'll agree to disagree. Yeah.
that's in. Look, I'm just going by the fact that I've listened to a lot of stuff from him about the making of this film from before it was made. I mean, all the way through its production, all the way through. I mean, he's been doing nonstop talking about this film. And he has talked about how tight this film had to be. He's talked about, because he edited this film all the way through shooting it. So he was putting it together as he was shooting it. What came out at Sundance was literally only a few months after shooting was complete. So he hasn't, I don't think he's been editing this film as much as you might think he has been.
Cool.
You know, but that, I mean, that's a whole different issue though. But I mean, I think the film is actually very tightly, it's as tight as a drum. It's really well put together, I think. That's personal opinion. Once again, it all comes down to personal opinion. It's all, a completely subjective thing. And this film is going to be the one to tear people up.
In the business, we call that reviewing.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, no, it's film in general. Reviewing, watching, viewing, paying your money, whatever. It's all going to be subjective.
We don't pay money for film.
Shh, other people do.
That's right. Sorry, non-critics.
The real people pay for their films.
And people. Are you calling me a non-real person?
You're a non-real person. We got to move on though because we are running out of time. For
okay, quickly, my list of five.
Wait! Round this off. So I'm going to say yes, it is well worth your money. Go pay for it. Josh, you're saying go see it, but you may not like it. And
I'm seeing definitely see it. I'm just saying that I'm not going to be. I would hold nothing against you if you didn't like this film.
Yes, I agree. I feel the same way. Yes, I have no problem.
I think I would have exactly the same. Go and see it, be warned.
Yeah, I understand people who love this film. I understand people who hate this film. So I personally, and we look at it, we go, I loved it. Richard wasn't quite so loving of it. Josh was probably a little bit more loving of it, but. It really, we completely understand what your opinions are.
Well, you can tell the effects of a film like this on the fact that there's three different people on a panel with three completely different opinions.
Absolutely. Yeah. So go see the film, make up your own mind. All right.
What a terrible review.
It's true, though. I mean, that's what we're saying. We're saying it's not
this
terrible.
Could be 20 minutes if we just go. Right, new movie out. Go and see it. See what you think.
Well, it's basically guys, it's basically what we say every week to every film. Every film is a situation where we sit there and we go, "This is our opinion." If you trust us, go see it. If you don't trust us, don't go. Or if you trust us, go see it, or don't go see it. Whatever whatever I'm trying to say here. But the point is, in this situation, we have three completely different opinions. And with three completely different opinions, all we can say is go see the film and make up your own mind, because it is going to be a completely polarizing film.
You don't see the movie. You don't see enough movies, and all of life's questions are answered in the movie.
I can't slap you when you're not in the same room with me. All right.
Do it, David.
Before we run into our list of five here, which is how we'll finish the show off today, we have a little bit of feedback, and I just want to read this really quickly because, first of all, we have Mike from Canada, who is back. Thank you very much, who hasn't written to us for a while. And he says, "This year we saw Real Steel and Planet of the Apes, two films where people said, bad idea, and then they turned out to be good films." So he's suggesting a list of five for us, and we're going to do this list next week, so prepare yourselves. He says, "Our list of five should be, sounded like a bad idea, and boy, were we wrong." Okay.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
So that's our list. Our list of five next week is going to be, sounded like a bad idea, but boy, were we wrong. All right. So thank you very much for that, Mike. I thought that was really good. And he also sent us an email that says, "Hey, Dave, Josh, and Richard from The Real Bits. It's been..." Stand by, okay? "It's been too long. Josh is starting to look happy, so I figured I should shoot you guys an email and bring him down a notch. First, I would like to thank you guys for recommending Fright Night. I've passed along your recommendation to my friends, and they all think I'm crazy. Thank you guys for keeping The Real Bits. Also, got the chance to see Tree of Life. My wife hated it, so that just proves it was an excellent film. It had some good realbits.com parts in it. Well, I'm off to check out Real Steel, not to be confused with the realbits.com. Haven't listened to your review of it, but Josh, you are incredibly wrong, and Richard at the realbits.com were incredibly right. Josh, how can you say those things about Real Steel? Your opinions were so different from that of another review I read on the realbits.com. I just don't get it. I've got an idea. How about we just replace Josh with my dog Hiccup and get some realbits.com opinions. Don't forget to check out therealbits.com. That's real with two E's. You can follow Richard on Twitter at DVDBits. Yours truly, Oh That Mr. Wheeler, formerly Mike from Canada. P.S. Thanks in advance for emailing me your list of five to me. All work and no play because I'm busy reading reviews on The Real Bits. All work and no play because I'm busy reading reviews on The Real Bits. All work and no play because I'm... And it goes on for an entire page of those.
Thanks, Mike. Checks in the mail.
The only problem with this email, Mike, is
that... That is a plug.
That's a plug. The only problem with this
email... Can I just point one thing out there? The website he's referring to is my site, therealbits.com.
And I would like to just point out to you, Mike from Canada, or Oh That Mr. Wheeler, that realbits.com is actually spelled The Real Bits, BITS.com. He spelled it and every one of the ones on this email with a Z. So he would never have found your site.
No. Maybe I should buy that URL now.
I think you should, because there you go.
Cancel that check, man. Just saying.
Yeah. I don't think my money's worth
out of that. All right. We actually have one more, but we're running out of time. We'll save it for next week. We got to go a list of five. So Tristan, I did get your email. We'll read that next week. All right. So list of five this week is five great films with religion as a core element. After our mutual feelings of disgust over The Passion of the Christ, it got me thinking. What are some of the great films that have religious themes? Or use religion as a core element. So that is the subject of our list this week. Let's start with Rich. Let's start with Josh.
We're starting with me?
Yep.
Number five on my list is Stigmata.
Oh.
Now, look, I mean, it's not the greatest film, but as somebody that has had a rather scary amount of religion around me throughout my life, I found that it was... It truly harnesses what I think is the terrifying thing of really heavy religious belief with this whole kind of concept of the stigmata. And it's something that terrified me as a kid, was the concept that apparently if you become really, really true and good to God, he punishes you by sticking invisible things through your hands, making you bleed, having like, it's just the whole concept of it. I'm like, that just sounds like the worst thing ever. And it's like, no wonder nobody tries to get really, really close to the man, because apparently he just makes you go through everything he went through.
Hey, Josh, I fear God. You better believe I fear God.
After seeing that film, I fucking fear God. I'll tell you that. Also just Gabriel Byrne. I just love that man. So
yeah.
It's been a long time. It's been a long time since I've seen Stigmata, but I quite liked it.
Yeah. Billy Corgan's soundtrack. Absolutely, what he was saying, man. Great soundtrack.
Yeah.
Fantastic, Richard. What's your number five?
My number five is probably the only one that's on my list that none of you will have seen or heard of. I was trying to steer away from Judeo-Christian kind of films, because, but being a lapsed Catholic boy, it was impossible to do that.
Right.
But the fifth film I've chosen is End of Animal. It's a Korean film about this, and it's a really interesting setup. It's about this car that just stops in the middle. There's a pregnant woman. She's on her way somewhere. She's in a cab. Car just stops. Everything seems to stop for a while. And it slowly becomes apparent they're in this wasteland. Nothing is working. And it's entirely possible the apocalypse is happening, or it could be nothing at all. So it's just such a really, really fascinating character piece, because it's really centering around these centering on. I hate the phrase centering around, because it's impossible. it's centering on these five or six characters, and it's a real, real study of human behavior as well. Sounds like a wank. It is a little bit. But well worth seeing if you can find it anywhere. I saw it at a festival this year. So
cool. No, I haven't seen that. It'd be interesting to catch up on that. My number five is Four Lions, the Christopher Morris film from last year. Oh,
man.
Ticket myself.
This is a film, for those who haven't seen it, about some guys deciding that they want to be suicide bombers in London. It is at times hysterically funny, and at other times horrifying that this is actually going on, and the way that they actually believe that they're doing the right thing on this. It's a great film. It really is. It'll make you think. So we're going to see. You're not here, so I can't see you to do a circle. Josh, number.
I'm glad it's write that difficult. Down, there's only three of us.
I know. Alright, just going on with it. Yeah. What's your number four?
Number four is The Exorcist.
Good choice.
Yeah, a little higher on my list.
Oh no, I imagine it would be. And look, I have my reasons for putting it lower. Just based on the actual
title of what we're looking at.
And the strength of your list as well.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I actually have The Exorcist in my honorary mentions. It's a great film. Ooh.
Exactly, but it's also, to me, it's the most fascinating part of religion, is this concept of demons and devils and so on and so forth. And watching this movie so early on just terrify me as a kid, create this really tense horror. Mm. It's just great character work. It's just like it's great. And it's the only reason it's lower on my list is just because I think my other choices are also very strong.
Right, fair enough. Richard, you're number four.
Number four is always look on the bright side.
Well, I'll double up with you because it's actually my number three.
Oh, okay.
So that's
right. It's Monty Python and the Holy Grail. No, sorry. It's Life of Brian.
Life of Brian. Fantastic film. I think it skewers religion so perfectly.
It is probably a better religious film than any of the serious religious films on any of our lists.
Absolutely. And considering
that we should make that number one now.
Considering that we quoted the hell out of it on our quote show, I won't go into it. But let's just say that when we get to number three...
He's not a Messiah. He's just a very naughty boy.
Get away from that Welsh tart. All right. My number four is Last Temptation of Christ.
A little higher on my list as well.
Well, there you go. Martin Scorsese's reflection on the life of Jesus based on the book. It is a fantastic film. I really liked it, and I really like the fact that he was willing to go there and actually try something different with it. It's also I kind of like the fact that he's got that pseudo-modern kind of twist to it using Gabriel's soundtrack and so forth. It's a really interesting film and worth having a look at. Your number... three, Josh.
My number three is actually me and Thing might as well talk this out at the same time because we both I know I'm doing that constantly today, Richard.
And you're in the same room.
Okay, so anyway, There Will Be Blood is our number three now. Funnily enough, I wanna start by explaining this is definitely not a favorite film of mine. But as much as I hate parts of it, I still own it. And it's more the fact that I find the film excruciating to watch. It's just so long and languid that it's not the kind of film I would rewatch, but it's the kind of film where its subject matter is so good and it's so well written and it's so well acted that it's just, even if I find it difficult, it's in the dialogue. And I think you're looking up some of it now. It is one of those really character-driven films. It's very much – it almost feels like a play at times.
It is. Yeah. I mean, it's based on a novel, but it doesn't draw much from that novel. It's based on the Upton Sinclair novel Oil.
Mm.
But it's its own thing. It is very much – I think a play is a good thing, but it's just – and it's interesting you should say that you haven't watched it since – I own it on Blu-ray as well, but I've not watched it, I think, since I've bought it because you have to be in a very definite mood.
It's a hard watch, dude.
What was that?
It's a hard watch.
It is a hard watch, but it is a brilliant film. And this is Paul Thomas Anderson. We really didn't see this film coming from him.
No, not Paul W.S. Anderson. P.T. Anderson.
No, not Paul W.S. Anderson. That's what I said. I said Paul Thomas Anderson.
Oh, Paul Thomas Anderson, yeah.
And no, Paul W.S. Anderson is shooting a film right now.
He's got Four Musketeers. What's it called? Three Musketeers.
Three Musketeers, yeah.
We don't want to mix these two up.
No, absolutely not. But I mean, I don't think you can extract religion. I mean, religion is the central core of There Will Be Blood. It's ostensibly about an oil tycoon trying to move in on an area, and there's this prophet, Eli Sunday, played terrifically by Paul Dano, who we'd really only seen in things like Little Miss Sunshine before this, and proves to be like an incredibly capable actor going up against someone like Daniel Day-Lewis. But, you know, I've just looked the dialogue up. You know, there's this great scene where Daniel Day-Lewis's character of Plainview is trying to get Paul Dano's character, Eli Sunday, who is a prophet in the town, to profess in front of his mass that he's a false prophet and that God is a superstition. Yeah. And all this comes around, you know, it's all swings and roundabouts in this film, and where it ends is brilliant. But the religious element is, as I said, for a lapsed Catholic, it's a great film.
Fantastic.
Dave. Did your number three, didn't you?
I've done my number three, which is Life of Brian. Did Richard, There Will Be Blood is your number three, right?
My number three.
So
as well,
we're
yeah.
back around to me again?
We're back to your number two.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah. Make that clear for Mike, who does our list. My number three is Life of Brian. Okay. Josh,
we'll
your number
you
two.
The best, Mike.
Cool. I had something very crappy for my number two, funnily enough. I was trying to look for something to jettison it for, and I actually stared at, I'm going to give you credit for this, I stared at Richard, oh, sorry, wait, not Richard, Things List. And when I was looking at Things List, he had on there Wings of Desire, which I watched in a cinema and just rewatched it 5 times that week, I think. Mm-hmm. And it's just such an interesting look. It's got some great religious moments in it. It's also very interesting. It's very well written. It's got some great character moments. And I just adore it. Great film.
Which film was that, sorry? I missed
Wings
the title.
Wings of Desire.
Oh, Wings of Desire. Right. So I missed the title. I'm going, sounds great. What is it?
No. It's on my also rans, but yeah, no, it's an incredibly powerful
film. Yeah, no, it is. It's a great film. All right. Your number two.
My number two is The Last Temptation of Christ.
Oh, okay. Well, there you go. All right. Tell us what you thought of it. Why is it your number two?
You know, and I think it's for all the reasons I didn't like The Passion of the Christ. When I had this, probably partly one of the reasons that inspired this list was my rant on Passion of the Christ.
It was a two thing. It was also Red State, but you know,
Red State. But The Last Temptation of Christ to me is the Jesus story, accessible for people who feel as though it is a fairy tale to, you know, for Christians. You know, it's. The thing that I always found fascinating about the Jesus story is not Jesus as he ascends into heaven and becomes, you know, the whole Holy Trinity thing. To me, it's Jesus is a man. You know, what did he do in those 33 years? You know, if you knew that your destiny was to become God, effectively, what would you, you know, do with your time on earth? And what temptations would you come under? And the fact that this was so controversial because it actually sees Jesus in the life he would have led had he decided to not go up on the cross, you know? And that's just such a powerful thing. And I think
that's why it freaked out a lot of Christians as well.
So, yeah, absolutely.
Freaked out a lot of Christians.
To me, though, if you are Christian and you're watching this with an open mind and an open heart as a Christian, then you will watch this movie and then get out of that the reasons why you should be Christian, or maybe the reasons why you shouldn't be.
Yeah.
Because it's not the pain and torture thing that Passion of the Christ was. It is, no, this is Jesus. He had the option to be a mortal man and have a life with Mary Magdalene. But no, he chose to sacrifice himself for you people. And to me, that's more about faith than watching someone suffer for 2 hours.
Agreed, completely.
Yeah. So, yeah, for those reasons, it's my number two.
Well done, dude. That's
fantastic. All right, my number two is Doubt, the 2008 John Patrick Shanley film.
Still haven't got around to seeing that.
Which
I have doubts.
Absolutely adored as a film. I love the ambiguity of some of the behaviors in the film, and I thought Meryl Streep was astonishing.
So, David, do you think he did or he didn't?
You know what? I don't think he did.
Yeah, I don't think you did either, but I don't think it matters.
No, I don't think it matters either. Because once the doubt was placed, that's all that mattered. So, so Josh, you need to watch this film. It's a great film.
All right. I will go out and source it over the next few weeks.
Josh, your number two. No, your number one.
My number one, man. My number one is The Omen.
Guess what? Guess what? It's my number one as well.
Ah, shit. There we go. Like, honestly, The Omen is just so brilliant from moment start to moment end. I have watched this film so many times. It's ridiculous. Gregory Peck, amazing.
Do you know one of the most ridiculous
things? Sorry, I'm hiccuping here and trying to be quiet about it.
Do you know one of the most ridiculous thing in the world? Yeah. It is actually in the Golden Turkey's book as one of the worst films ever made.
Really?
Yep.
What?
No.
1976's The Omen by Richard Donner is actually in the Golden Turkey Awards, which I completely disagree with in every single way possible.
It's all for you, Damien.
I think it's a fantastic film, and I think Gregory Peck is a bit wooden in it, but I think it suits him to be a bit wooden as the senator. Mm. I thought Lee Remick was great. I thought the kid was creepy as fuck.
Dude, you know, there's something about one particular image in the film, which is when they're hitting towards the church in the car.
Oh, yes.
And the kid is just looking down the barrel of the camera and just slowly prickling up like a cat. And I don't know how they achieved that from a kid who looks like he's barely able to understand why he's on screen. Like, he doesn't really act as much as he does just be a child on the camera. That's like basically what they achieved with him. Like, he very rarely sort of acts as such. Like, he doesn't really get into character. But what he does in that moment just honestly stuck with me for the rest of my life. There's something about that image. I'm getting goosebumps right now.
Oh, no, it's fantastic. And then he starts to scream and squeal. And it's like, oh, no, it's fantastic. No, I love The Omen. As soon as we started doing this list, it was like, yeah, that's got to be one there. That's
yep, that was right up the top. That was the first one I wrote on. It was definitely number one.
Absolutely.
I have the Pentology. And definitely not worth watching any of the other ones.
No, actually, I don't mind Damien Omen 2. It's nowhere near the class of the first one, but I don't mind it. But they just forget it after that. and Richard, that's our number ones. Both of us have the same film. What's your number one? I think
my
we know it
one
is.
My number one is Beneath the Planet of the Apes. No, sorry. It's my number one is already been mentioned. It's The Exorcist.
I had to figure that was where it was.
Yeah. And for one simple reason, the power of Christ compels you.
There you go. Do you guys want to hear a little, before we get out of here, one of the scenes that is most talked about in The Omen is where Lee Remick falls off the balcony. Mm-hmm. And do you want to know how they achieved that shot?
No.
Yeah, go nuts.
Richard Donner is a master of falls. If you look at all of his movies, they all have amazing falls in them, from the opening shot in Lethal Weapon with the drug girl to that balcony. That shot has always been really, really fascinating to me. And when you actually find out how they made it, to get that effect of her following her down and hitting the floor, what they did was they dropped a fishbowl first and shot that. That gave you the illusion of height. Once the illusion of height was established, they then built it sideways. They put her on roller skates and pushed her towards a wall.
Huh.
So she's actually colliding with a wall, not the floor.
Tricky bastards.
That's really good.
Is that brilliant or what? Yeah. So there's your moment in cinema.
Your moment in cinema.
Now
I need to record some of these, dude.
I don't know. I'm just mad ad libs, really. Mad libs.
Now we also had, sorry, we also had one more little bit of feedback, which I forgot. It's not actually a letter. It was just he wrote us a quick note to say, had we heard about the woman who is suing the producers of Drive, one of your favorite films, because she believes the trailer was misleading and thought she was going to see a Fast and Furious type movie, and it and it wasn't that at all. So she's suing them and the entire industry for misleading trailers.
A good friend of mine said,
I hope she wins. I don't know, part of me wants her to win.
A good friend of mine was talking on the phone about that film recently. I love the way he described it. He said, it's been, because I mean, like, it's understandable if you've seen the trailers over here and the posters and stuff, which make it look like a Fast and the Furious film.
True.
He says, it's like a Fast and the Furious film without the fast. It's just furious.
That's great. All right, let's get our out of here. This show has run a little bit longer than it should. I'm going to say, if you agree or disagree with anything that we have to say, and I'm sure you will this week, all you have to do is send your email to feedback@filmactually.com. Drop us a voicemail, 02-8011-3167. That is a Sydney number if you are outside of Australia or outside of Sydney. You can use our Skype ID, Geek Actually, all one word. Now, Josh, where can people find more about you around the internet?
RawDLC.com is not my website, but it's a bunch of guys that are games journalists that are all talking about games and pop culture and anime and everything you can possibly imagine. And we do it all from the hub that is RawDLC, so go over and check it out. And apart from that, if you're into hip-hop, hiphopnetonline.com is the website to go to. Short, very quick bits about what's going on in hip-hop at this time.
Fantastic. And Richard, where can people find out more about you? Let me guess. It would be something about therealbits.com, right?
I was about to say, I think I've had a good plug this week.
That was Richard at the Real Bits.
You'll find me online at therealbits.com. That's R-E-E-L bits with an S.
With an S.
Or you can find me on Twitter at DVDBits. Not now, obviously, as Josh pointed out before, because I am talking a thing. But maybe by the time you listen to this, if you're not listening to it live, I'll actually be on that site editing something.
You could open up a tab and put Twitter then you could validate.
Technically speaking, I am, and I have the admin section of my site opened up in a browser.
So you are technically at
The Real Bits.
So technically
I am on The Real Bits at the moment.
Yeah, okay, there you go. This time you've validated it. That's fine. It's okay now.
And it was true last time too, but, you know, you're just being a smartass.
I was being a smartass. That's pretty much what I do.
Okay, constantly. Get your merchandise, join the fan page, follow us on Twitter, or do all those other wonderful things. Just go to geekactually.com, hit the follow us button, and you'll be able to find all sorts of information about me and Josh. And Richard, we got to put all your details on that follow us button soon. So we can get you on there as well.
I suppose so.
Yeah, why not? Charlie and Brad and Troy, I believe his name is. Sorry, I'm a newbie to your new show. Are back. RealReboundRadio.com. You can listen to Good Day Sir or Movie Matchup. They're both great podcasts. Check them out. WeekendRonan.com is the home for the real junkies. REEL, just like the real bits.
.com.
Real Junkies podcast. They're like us. They like to review movies and they drink while doing it. So they're always fun to listen to. And of course, we can't go without mentioning our good friend and cartoonist, Josh Spencer, who did our lovely logos for our show. Find him at attackninja.blogspot.com. That's it. We opened the show with a clip from Red State. If you were wondering what that was, you shouldn't have because it was also in the trailer. And we are closing the show with a taste of Ennio Morricone's amazing score from the 1982 version of The Thing. So we're going to close out with that. You guys got anything you want to add?
I don't think there's anything else really to say, Dave.
Okay, well, no,
we have talked it out. We have talked out everything that we had to this week.
We have just about, haven't we?
And I'm just feeling a little awkward about being in Josh's bedroom at this point.
Yeah, I got to say that I need to get up and get a drink.
All right, well, we're gonna.
It's been sweaty work.
It's warm here. Let me tell you guys are glad you're not in here. You'd be having to put up with my sweat.
Ew.
Yeah. Okay, anyway. Go see more movies. You don't see enough movies, and all of life's questions are answered in the movies. And we will see you all next week. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Hey, I hope you enjoyed the show. And just a reminder that if you enjoyed Film Actually, you might also enjoy our geek podcast called Geek Actually, which you can also find on iTunes or at geekactually.com. It's our weekly nonsense podcast where we talk about tech and geek and fun things and food and just about everything else that we can think of. We have a lot of fun doing it. And we hope you come along and join us. You can also watch that live at geekactually.com/live.